Live from San Francisco on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network, you are listening to Wrestling Observer Live with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
Let's get it on!
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the show, Sports Byline Broadcast Network, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, TuneIn, iHeart, iTunes, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Rush Channel 93. No matter how you're listening, thank you for making Observer Live the most listened to daily professional wrestling and mixed martial arts program in the world. I am Mike Sempervivi here with you. Brian Alvarez is not. He's with his whole squad right now, taking a long weekend. Don't worry, he'll be back with me tomorrow. But until then, I've got everything under control. If not, at least I'm going to fake it, at least as much as I possibly can. So we weren't here live yesterday, so I encourage you to join me today. Brian's not here, so we're going to use the Sports Byline studio lines. 1-800-878-PLAY. That's 1-800-878-7529. If you want to get a hold of me on Twitter, you can do so as well, at Sempervivi. Brian's Twitter is at Brian Alvarez, and Sports Byline is at Sports Byline. It is Monday, so you know what that means. Monday Night Raw is tonight. It's the go-home show for Sunday's Extreme Rules pay-per-view that's coming up. They have a fatal five-way scheduled for that show. They're going to set it up tonight with a triple threat match and a singles match as well, too, and let you know what's going on and who's in those as I keep the tradition alive of the vaunted WWE.com five-point preview that I know you all love every single week. Plus, there's a whole lot more going on as well. UFC Stockholm took place yesterday with a big, big performance from Alexander Gustafsson. There's been a lot of head-scratching going on this year with Conor McGregor seemingly out of the picture, with Floyd Mayweather, with Ronda Rousey being out of the picture. UFC needs fights. They need big fights to take place, and they may have one again. A lot of it's going to depend on what happens with Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier, but one thing's for sure, no matter who wins that, we've got a rematch ready to go with Gustafsson. We've got New Japan's Best of the Super Juniors tournament barreling towards its end. Let you know where that stands. And a whole bunch of other stuff as well, too, which I'll get to after the break. I am Mike Sempervivi, and this is Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcast Network. All right, we are back. Mike Sempervivi here with you. Greetings to all of you listening worldwide over the American Forces Radio Network. Thank you to all the great men and women around the world who put their lives on the line in order to protect ours. And on this Memorial Day, we should take a little extra time to pause and reflect and give respect to those who have made the ultimate sacrifice and service to our country. You know, the military doesn't carry an official position on how stupid your take is on how Kazuchika Okada wouldn't be a star in any other era, but they will defend your right to say it. Speaking of, first caller, 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, how are you?
Good. My question was actually on Jinder Mahal. It was something I saw on Brian's Twitter feed. Someone asked Brian about Jinder's trainer getting arrested in 2015. Do you know if that case was ever cleared up? I didn't know if you had time to research that listener's question on that. And also, where did that tour of India come from that they talked about last week? Then they went about saying that's not happening on Friday.
Thank you very much for the call, Ryan. I have no idea. When it comes to Jinder's trainer, I didn't see that on the question on Brian's Twitter. I'll have to go back and look at that. I have no clue. His wrestling trainer, his physical trainer at his house, I have no idea who it is. I guess I'll look into that. When it comes to the India tour, apparently because of WWE wanting to get into India, I guess it was in Alberto Del Rio. We talked about this on the show last week. An Alberto Del Rio comment made to the Indian Business Times, I believe it was. I can't remember exactly who it was, the Indian Times, where he mentioned that they would like to come back next year, meaning this September of 2017 for a tour. And when WWE all of a sudden decided, hey, we're in the India business now, and we're going to push Jinder, and India is now going to be a focus for us, a very public focus for us. It was just figured, okay, well, it looks like the India tour is on, and there it goes. I know Brian brought it up to Dave on the show last week, and Dave was like, I had no clue about an India tour. And it was just one of those things that, you know, we kind of messed up on here because we just kind of took it and ended up going with it, figuring that it was going on, and we didn't look. And when had a chance to look at what Mookie Ghana had put out after the lawsuit, the settlement or whatever the deal was that ended up releasing what the 2017 schedule was going to be for WWE. They were going to the South Pacific. It just wasn't going to be India. They were going to New Zealand and Australia and doing all that sort of stuff, and just they won't have the time to do it. Now, in 2018, I'm sure we're going to see that tour of India be taking place. No doubt about that. Speaking of, might as well glom onto that for a second, just because it was noted on the Wrestling Observer front page yesterday in a news update that Impact is bringing about 25 wrestlers to Mumbai for the TV tapings that'll be taking place, I guess, tomorrow and Wednesday, Tuesday and Wednesday this week. So India has always been a focus of Impact, or at least they tried to make it a focus, both there and in the UK. So they're trying again here, as well. They haven't been on tour the last couple of years there because of financial issues with Dixie Carter and all that sort of stuff. Apparently under Ed Nordholm and, Anthem. This isn't just going to be like a one-time make good. This is something they're serious about. So, good for them there. I guess, and we'll note this also too from Impact, for listeners in the UK. Apparently on Friday they had aired, the last week's episode of Impact on Spike UK. To make up for that, on this coming Friday, they're going to air two episodes back to back to get everybody caught up. Last Saturday, things went all nutty because Spike had Bellator's London event live going on too, so that kind of screwed them up there. So they kind of have to get everything back on track a little bit there, and they're going to look to do that on Friday. Here in the States, things are actually a lot smoother for them too, as Impact's ratings were up to 305,000 viewers they averaged on Pop TV, which is up from 272,000 viewers the week previous. They actually had competition from the NBA with Cleveland and Boston in the Eastern Conference Final Game 5. So the tradition of nothing really affecting the hardest core viewership of TNA Impact basically lives on. I think college football and I think college basketball, was that the effects? Somebody will have to remind me of that. I think those were the biggest effects that would ever be seen when it kind of came to Impact. It wouldn't be the NFL, wouldn't be seemingly any other thing. So their hardest core is still there somehow, some way, in finding their way on Pop TV, not just Filthy Tom Lawler. There's apparently other people as well. When it comes to ratings tonight, if you want a Tuesday morning quarterback in advance, the question that has been brought up, will the show do 3 million people? Because notably in North America tonight, the NHL finals begin with Pittsburgh and Nashville, but there's no NBA. There's not an NBA show this week. There's not the playoffs, the finals. There won't affect them next week either. There's no threat of the NBA finals until June 12th if it goes that long. And that show's already been counter-programmed with Brock Lesnar. So as he wrote in the newsletter this week and talked about on the Members Only show with Brian last night, Dave Meltzer feels the show, if it's not 3 million, if we're looking at 2.85 million people, that's a really bad sign. Last week, Raw did 2.608, which was the third time in 4 weeks they set a record for non-football and non-holiday levels of viewers going back to 96. The show broke the previous low of 2.683 for the show from London on May 8th, the taped show, which, you know, tape shows really didn't matter when it came to the what was on the show from how it looks, because even though Raw last week was still the fifth most watched show on cable, I mean, it's still an ouch to see numbers like that. The first hour of the show did the lowest numbers in modern history with 2.661 million, lower than any other first hour against the NFL, lower than what they did against the Trump-Clinton debate. That's bad. Second hour got up to 2.759, but then it dropped to 2.425, a 12% drop from hour 2 to 3. Eh. You know, it's. I know they're going into summer. I know it's post-mania. I know you got all these excuses and everything like that. And, hey, it still is the fifth most watched show on cable, but again, what they're doing right now, there's just not a whole lot of teeth to it. And we're going to have to see if they can turn this thing around. I mean, there's the one benefit of the network and these shows coming up on Sunday, Extreme Rules being $9.99. One, they have too many of them with SmackDown and Raw now, both having special events. But, you know, I don't know how you could get anybody to come off paying, you know, the olden days price of what it get up to, $34.95, $44.95. You couldn't get anybody to pay $19.95 for this. You couldn't get anybody to pay in-your-house pricing for this. We'll have to see what happens tonight. And it's not the fault of the talent in the ring, that's for sure. What they're possibly scheduled to go out there to do, as far as results go, can be bad. But they got too much talent for the matches oftentimes themselves to be poor, and I don't think the three-way they have going on tonight isn't going to be bad either. Bray Wyatt, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor. Finn Balor, obviously, you know, being teased in a good position, jawing back and forth with Paul Heyman last week, can continue on to see if he's going to be in play. Bray Wyatt's been taking L's, I think, most of the weekend when it comes to Roman Reigns and being involved in tag team matches on the Raw brand. So that may be the result here. And Samoa Joe gets to kind of be the wild card in this whole deal. Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, the other two guys who are in the Extreme Rules Fatal 5-Way, they'll be facing off against each other. I actually had to go back and look to see, you know, when these guys face each other on TV, what are the results? And talk about 50-50 booking. Three wins for Roman, three wins for Seth, and one double countout. And the last time they actually wrestled each other was last June 28th after Seth Rollins had won the title at Money in the Bank, turned around and lost it to Dean Ambrose when he cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase that same night. They wrestled each other on Raw the next night, went to a double countout, so there you go. And if you're trying to bet on whether you're going to get a clean finish here, I probably doubt that too, but we'll have to see. See what you have to say too. 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. Mike Sempervivi, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcast Network. All right, we're back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Mike Sempervivi here with you. Brian Alvarez not here with you, taking the long weekend. We'll be back tomorrow, though. We'll be back tonight if you're a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com. He and Dave Meltzer will review Raw. They talked about the entire weekend last night on a members-only show as well, too. So if you're not a member, why aren't you? A little bit of sad news here. Frank DeFord passed away at the age of 78 at his home in Key West, Florida. DeFord was a brilliant, empathetic picture painter who always exuded dignity and respectability and always treated the subjects of his stories and commentaries with a certain amount of true dignity, which oftentimes is lost today. And earlier on this year, DeFord retired from a position of giving his musings and commentaries on NPR's All Things Considered, which was a practice he began in 1980. A sample of those, small sample, very small sample of those, you can read for yourself in his book, I Know That Voice Anywhere, which was the last one that he had put out in 2016. Some of his favorite commentaries that he did for NPR. He did 1,656 of them. It's amazing. I think that was amazing. He also did 50 years at Sports Illustrated, too. And for, you know, some older heads, he, when they think of Sports Illustrated, they think of Frank DeFord. You know, I think younger people, maybe they think of Rick Riley. I don't even know anymore, you know, if it's not the swimsuit issue, exactly who you attach to Sports Illustrated. But for years, it was Frank DeFord. Where he began contributing in 1962. And a lot of the younger people may only know him or know him best from a position on HBO's Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. He would occasionally appear on the Sports Reporters on ESPN. Although, if he's known for anything in these modern times other than maybe an incredible story that I hoped you would have read, it was his attempt to create the daily national sports paper, The National, in 1989. Which, I tell you what, I'm 42 years old, 41 years old, not giving myself a year there too quickly. But as somebody that grew up, the expansion of cable and sports reporting and ESPN and how things were covered and how the newspapers were changing and how personalities, these guys like Tony Kornheiser and Mike Lupica and Michael Wilbon and guys like that, you know, they were, their names and their work, it just seemed everybody was kind of peaking at a great time, and there was a whole lot of great stuff going on, and he tried to take all of that stuff and create the National and basically do what USA Today did, which was use satellites to pump out basically a national newspaper with some local flavor in some bigger cities too. Unfortunately, it didn't work. But one of the things he did in that time was tab Dave Meltzer to do a column for the National, Wrestling Observer's Own. And a lot of people didn't like that because they looked at wrestling as, well, it was wrestling. You know, something that didn't belong in the paper. And if it did belong in the paper, it didn't belong in the sports page. It belonged in the entertainment page. You know, most of those people probably believed it belonged on the obituary page and didn't want anything to do with it. But Frank DeFord fought those people. Frank DeFord pointed out Dave's background in sports journalism, pointed out the work he's put in, and pointed out the incredible amount of talent he had to understand and to write, and looked at Dave's work and didn't look at it as pro wrestling. He looked at it as writing stories about people. And that gets forgotten about with Dave's work. You know, sometimes it only comes up with the obituaries, but some of the work Dave has put in was brilliant for any sports writer, let alone for someone covering pro wrestling. And Frank DeFord saw that. And Dave on Twitter wrote that Frank DeFord was one of my heroes growing up, and in a strange twist of fate, I was lucky enough for a brief time to work with him. I'm sure he's going to have a lot more to say about Frank DeFord tonight for subscribers on WrestlingObserver.com for the Wrestling Observer radio show. So, sad news there, but I did feel as though I should note it, especially for the impact he had on the Wrestling Observer and on sports in general, you know, especially long-form storytelling, which, boy, in today's day and age is lost. It is really treated as if it's some freakish thing, you know. You're on a network here with Ron Barr, you know, when I think Ron Barr, that's what I think of, those long-form interviews, those conversations that he'd have, these humanizing, wonderful conversations that, you know, are plenty of them up in the archives here at sportsbyline.com, too. And it's just, it's frustrating that so much of it seems to be lost, but there's always going to be somebody, hopefully, that gets touched by it, like me, and hopefully I can, you know, give that out to the people. I can't do it myself, but boy, I can certainly point people in the direction of the greats who can. And Frank DeFord was certainly one of those people. So Godspeed to him. If you want to join me, you can. 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. UFC Fight Night in Stockholm, Sweden on FS1 was yesterday. It's Fight Night number 109 if you're keeping track at home. This is going to be replayed, actually, tonight, Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS1, I believe, unless that's bumped off for some other reason. But is it worth going out of your way to see? I don't know. I didn't see all of it. But what I did see, I think you may want to, which was Alexander Gustafsson's just complete decimation of Glover Teixeira. The UFC needs fights, and they certainly have one coming. On July 29th, I believe it is. I think that's when the scheduling is of John Jones and Daniel Cormier in another continuation of their never-ending blood feud that these two have with each other. But the winner of that fight has got one set up now with Alexander Gustafsson, who just completely peppered Glover Teixeira's face. Used an interesting defense in that every time the Glover moved towards him or he felt a little bit pushy, he literally almost turned his back and ran away. I mean, this was like almost like schoolyard stuff. He would hit, he hit Teixeira a couple times with like the same punch over and over again. And then like Glover would kind of like barrel towards him. Gustafsson just turned around and run away. And it was really a hell of a performance. I'm kind of underselling it here, but he really looked fantastic. And, you know, Gustafsson, he gave the fight, I don't want to say he gave the fight away against Daniel Cormier. Cormier won that fight, but, you know, he has given John Jones, he gave him the best fight John Jones could have possibly had, and that was a rematch that I wanted to see a long time ago. It looks like we could see it again if John Jones gets by Daniel Cormier coming up, so we'll have to see where that goes. Almost bumping up against the break here, so I want to slip in Jim in Virginia. Jim, how are you?
Hey, how you doing today, Mike?
How you feeling? He's out, I don't know, gallivanting about on his gold boat with his kid and or something like that. And, you know, it's something that one of those one percenters would do.
I was just thinking about something. Y'all was talking about Oscar the other day. And, you know, I was just thinking about Kerry Hojo and Alex Shirai coming in now.
Mm-hmm.
Will WWE kind of not be so hard on those girls about the moves that they do in stardom and, you know, not be so clamped down on things they can do? Or do you think they will just be real strict on some of those wild moves they did in stardom?
Oh, I think they should be. I think they will, and I think in some cases they should dial them back a little bit. They cannot do, you can't do pile drivers off the apron, at least not on a regular basis. You can't do power bombs off the apron to the floor or some of these spinning back fists that connect directly on the jaw. I mean, it's not all the time. I don't want to, you know, paint, you know, stardom like that or anything like that. And the girls are great at what they do. But, I mean, there is some things that just WWE doesn't allow the dudes to do on a regular basis that they're not going to allow the women to do. And I think they're going to want them to kind of fit into, you know, a little bit of a, you know, of what they want. And Jim, I know we're pushing up against the break here, so I'm actually going to hold you over until then.
Okay.
And just, you know, just add in that, again, we're going to have to see, but you see what they've done with Asuka / Kana, and if you had seen her before in stardom, you probably know what you're going to be getting when it comes to these ladies as well, too. But find out what Jim thinks about that and what you think about that at 1-800-878-PLAY. This is Mike Sempervivi, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Jim, still on the phone. Hey, look, again, you know, back to what we're saying with you know, to reset what we're saying with WWE and it comes to those women. You know, again, you got to look at kind of what they've done with Asuka and what they've done with other people that they've brought in who, you know, have a style that doesn't exactly fit their own. I don't think they're going to, they're not like they're going to neuter them or anything like that. But again, some of these things I just, you know, you just, they're not going to be doing in WWE, certainly not in NXT on a weekly basis.
Well, I tell you, there's another one in stardom that I think would be great because I think she hits the style and the look perfectly, and that's the SWA champion, Toni Storm. Do you think they'll eventually bring her in?
Yep. I don't know how you don't. Like, she's like, you know, they've had some women that have gone over, you know, no matter who it is, and I think the last, I don't want to say it's the last two big named or the most noticeable women they brought over were for title defenses, and in Toni Storm's case to win it were Nikki Cross and Toni Storm. And
exactly,
she, you know, Nikki Cross is doing in NXT right now as a member of Sanity, and with Toni Storm again, she's a basically like a perfect package for WWE. She screams WWE. I mean, height, look, how she carries herself, she's great, and she has had you know, great matches over there, and she is a natural. I don't know when it happens. I'm not exactly saying that I want to see it or anything like that. I'll be fine if she remains on the indie scene. It's like there's like a lot of women like that, you know, Nixon Newell and whoever, you know, there's a ton of them. Hey, stay as indie wrestlers. You don't have to go to NXT, but, you know, I can't stop them either.
One other thing, what do you think they'll do tonight with the girls on Raw tonight, you know, with Bayley and Alexa Bliss?
Well, Jim, thank you very much for the call.
Take care.
I don't know. Yeah, this is all the go-home show again to Extreme Rules, where we have all these truly extreme matches, including Kendo Stick on a Pole match. Back to the Raw 5-point preview, which I talked about a little bit earlier on in the show. We scroll down to number 4. Oh, I'm sorry, it's number 5, apparently. Can Bayley go to the extreme against Alexa Bliss? 1 week after Raw champion Alexa Bliss brutalized Bayley with a Kendo Stick. the self-proclaimed goddess of WWE, used the same devious implement to attack Mickey James, prompting the Huggable One to charge the ring and nearly, in italics, I just mentioned that they didn't actually put in italics on the paper, give Alexa a taste of her own medicine. Bayley intends to reclaim the Raw Women's title in a kendo stick on a pole match at WWE Extreme Rules, but we haven't seen the fan-favorite superstar truly embrace her extreme side against Alexa. Will Bayley finally, quote, stick it to Little Miss Bliss on Raw? Well, Yeah, probably. What's going to happen here, I would assume, is, yes, Bayley gets some level of revenge where she doesn't go out there and falls all over herself and trips and then somehow gets beat up at the end anyway, which seems to keep happening here when it comes to her. And I actually think she does get some licks in on Alexa tonight with the kendo stick. So, yeah, that's probably the direction that they're going to go. Maybe you can have Alexa continue to beat down somebody else. You know, I don't know who, but just pick somebody else off that side. Alexa keeps beating her down, beating her down, beating her down. Bayley runs down, makes the save. I don't think that's the worst idea in the world. It's one of those old school things that, you know, will always remain as a, you know, tried and true fixture of wrestling programming. So, also coming up at Extreme Rules, the ultra extreme cage match between the Hardys and Sheamus and Cesaro. Yeah, I know that's what everybody was expecting last week when Matt Hardy said, you know, I've got the match that we want to do. You know, the two men who are best known and will always be thought of in duo with the ladder match, they take a cage match. And last week, Matt Hardy beat Sheamus, which gave the chance for that match to take place. I would assume it's now going to be Jeff Hardy and Cesaro tonight, where I don't know which direction they're going to go with the belts. I mean, obviously, from how it seems, the idea of the broken Hardys is way out the window for right now. So I know that I guess that there was the working rumor or the working idea rumored to be that they were going to wait Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy lose the belts to whoever it is and then they start to break. With that not happening now, do you continue on with this? You don't have a whole lot of tag teams. You know, this is like SmackDown. There's just not a whole lot to work with there. And, you know, I know Cesaro or Sheamus can be a big, you know, stiff klutz, but Sheamus and Cesaro are a team that I actually like. Their matches with the Hardys are much better than a lot of other options that they could be up against for both teams. So I'm hoping this thing kind of continues on, and I don't know how you have the good guys hold on to the belts one more time. But I would actually have them do that before they lose to Sheamus and Cesaro a little bit further down the line. So I that's the direction I would go. Whether they do that or not, we'll have to see. Also tonight, the case of who attacked Enzo Amore. Something tells me I'm going to be far more interested in whatever the Fashion Files have coming up for their mystery, on Tuesday night than I will care about who attacked Enzo, but this is what comes from the vaunted five-point preview. The outspoken Enzo Amore has made countless enemies since his arrival on Raw last year, so Raw General Manager Kurt Angle's official investigation into his mysterious backstage attacks last Monday night might take a while. As the Olympic hero searches for answers to this heinous assault, so do does Big Cass. But we doubt the realest guy in the room, Enzo, by the way, caps on all that, just to let you know that that's him, will follow due process as he hunts down his friend's unknown attacker. The certified G's have most recently had issues with Apollo Crews and his new mentor Titus O'Neil, but this type of behavior doesn't seem on message for the Titus brand. Could it be another tag team looking to make a name for themselves? Maybe Goldust and his new ruthless attitude is to blame. As speculation continues to swirl around this shocking incident, don't expect this unnamed assailant to be hidden for long. Or assailants. As Brian pointed out last week, the Revival, in the background, looks to be back. That's who they were feuding with before they got hurt, or Scott Dawson got hurt. That's who they will probably be coming back with. And there's my little glimmer of hope when it comes to whoever comes out of the Cesaro-Sheamus-Hardys feud. The Hardys and Dash and Dawson, I want to see that. I want to see the revival against almost anybody, but I'd really, really, really like to see them against the Hardys in a feud, which is, you know, hey, if you didn't want to give the belts to Cesaro and Sheamus and actually have the Hardys win that feud, I'll be completely fine with that. And I don't think that that's not probably that far off of a possible thing, too. With, you know, I know that they're making a tease in this, or some people are believing that there's a tease that Big Cass could turn dirty on Enzo. He doesn't need that right now. Enzo certainly doesn't need that. Big Cass definitely doesn't need that. They're better as a duo. They're better together. They're not a great tag team, but you know what? They're at least a tag team that people do respond to, and they respond to during the match while it's going on. So I hope that's the direction that they go. So the Revival kind of slipping in here and being the group, I think, is probably a pretty good idea. Plus, what that also does, too, is it adds another match coming up to the pay-per-view on Sunday, because there's not a whole lot listed there. Hopefully, we'll see what direction they go in tonight and how much is revealed, but I'm sure they're going to have something there. So there it all is. You know, that's the biggest stuff for tonight. In New Japan news, and much more exciting action, not a whole lot of matches listed for Dominion, which the company is coming up on very quickly here on June 11th. But there are some good ones, too. Cody and Michael Elgin, Pongy Vice against the Young Bucks for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. War Machine, the IWGP Tag Team Champions against the Gorillas of Destiny. Minoru Suzuki in a lumberjack match defending the Never Openweight Championship against Hiroki Goto. Tetsuya Naito defending the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, which he just destroyed. So we're going to have a new belt, it looks like, which is a good idea. Come into play. He'll face off against Tanahashi, and then obviously the big one, Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega singles match for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship match. I'm willing to bet outside of the Tokyo Dome, especially a few years ago for Wrestle Kingdom 9, this might be the most anticipated Japanese show for Americans of recent times. Atlantis Ultimo Guerrero was pretty big a couple of years ago, and I'm sure there's, you know, somebody's going to bring up something that they were more excited for the ICW show last year or something like that. But this is pretty big, and obviously it's because Kenny Omega, and it's because of coming to the States. And, you know, good news for New Japan. The show's been officially announced as a sellout, and I don't know what the real number is for a super no vacancy full house, as they say over there. I think they actually claimed that for a show 2 years ago, which was Okada and AJ Styles for the IWGP title. That did like 11 or 11.5 or something like that. But bottom line is they're selling standing room only tickets for about $35, which gives you an idea on how the company's doing right now. Prices for this show are the highest in a while. So it looks like it's going to be a big night no matter what. Now, how they come out of this with the booking will be interesting. A lot of wins. Loses to Omega in the States. Omega wins, defends the title in the States. Omega wins. We have Okada win the belt here to have a title change in the States. Who knows what's going to happen? I think the most obvious thing that I could think that's going to happen is Tetsuya Naito is going to defeat Hiroshi Tanahashi. That's one thing I would bet, because I don't think with a torn bicep, Tanahashi is defeating Naito. So that's going to be coming up right after the Best of the Super Juniors closes here. Took place one this morning at Currican Hall. Not much to see on it, to be honest with you. If you want to skip most of it, you can, until the main event, which was Raisuke Taguchi and Kushida. That was so good. Kushida went after Taguchi's arm. Taguchi was going after Kushida's leg. Kushida kept trying to get Taguchi to submit to the hoverboard, and Taguchi kept fighting it until Kushida hit the Back to the Future for a pin. The rest of the show wasn't much. Volador and ACH was okay, but then it was Bushi and Kanemaru and Tiger Mask and Desperado. So really the capper was Taguchi and Kushida, and the biggest deal about that is that B block has everybody at 3-3, 6 points, meaning it all comes down to the last night for them on June 1st. I'll give you a quick rundown of how all that looks as we lead into the June 3rd final that may include Will Ospreay. I'll be really surprised if it doesn't, but we'll take a look at that when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Sometimes love. All right, we're back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Mike Sempervive here with you. Ryan Alvarez not here. He will be back tomorrow. As I mentioned, Best of the Super Juniors, New Japan. Block B. everybody's sitting there 3-3, meaning whoever wins, should be a lot of interesting things that are going to take place on June 1st. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to shake out. I would figure Canamaro and Desperado, they'll probably draw. But I'm trying to figure out who's going to come out of that, and will we see a six or a three-way match? It's possible. Taguchi, ACH, Kushida, Volador Jr., Tiger Mask, Bushi, all there. Again, Canamaro, Desperado are too, but I don't think they will be. I don't think Tiger Mask and Bushi will be either. I'm wondering if it's going to be Kushida. Could be. Could be Taguchi. Could be ACA. Who knows what it's going to be. I'll go with Kushida for right now, but we'll have to see. Will Ospreay, Hiromu Takahashi, big match on Wednesday coming up here. Will likely determine the winner of the block. It's possible Dragon Lee could win as well, too, since he holds wins over both Ospreay and Hiromu Takahashi. But either way, a lot of fun stuff coming out of that A block, including Jushin Thunder Liger possibly getting his last win. Best of the Super Juniors as he faces off against Taichi. It's going to be his last shot to do so. Finals coming up on June 3rd. Going to be live on New Japan World with English commentary. Again, it's going to be hard for me to believe that Will Ospreay is not going to be one of those guys, but we'll have to see what happens there. Dr. Keith Presents, I forgot to mention this a little bit earlier on, too. Alan for Life, back in full control. Joe and Mike, they're doing an honor roll rundown of some of the biggest names and some of their favorites to appear in Ring of Honor. So if you get a chance, go to WrestlingObserver.com to check that out, as well as the Observer Live or Observer Radio Show tonight with Dave and Brian. I'm Mike Sempervivi. I want to thank producer Scott. I want to thank all you out there for listening, and all of you out there serving in our military. I want to thank you very much. Talk to you again tomorrow.